You're listening to the Community Character Hour. If you joined us last episode, we explored the ferries and steamboats and how movement shaped this region. Today, we continue that story through one individual, Edward L. Bonner. Bonner, that's a familiar name. But we begin each episode with a newspaper clipping from the past. What have we got today, Hannah?
Today's article comes from the Northern Idaho News on December 22nd. 1914, which is exactly 50 years after one of the major events we're going to be discussing today. It's called Against Improving the Kootenai River. The United States engineers have reported adverse to the proposition to improve the Kootenai River from Bonner's Ferry to the international boundary, according to a dispatch from that place to the Spokane Chronicle. The dispatch is as follows. The hopes of local people interested in the securing of a government appropriation for navigation purposes, the channel of the Kootenai River between this point and the boundary line, went glimmering Wednesday when notifications were received from the United States Engineers Office at Seattle to the effect that a report had been made to the government which was unfavorable to the project. Whew, that was one sentence.
You lost me about halfway through there. Hold on. The effect that a report had been made to the government which was unfavorable to the project. So, okay, so we are, so the government's, the report was unfavorable, and therefore the government was going to respond unfavorably to
Correct.
The project. Okay.
Yes.
And we are, and so there's going to be no improvement, no navigational improvements to the Kootenai River.
Exactly. And I don't know if that means like rerouting parts of it or, you know, just making the banks easier to access. Remember at this time, the entire valley around Bonner's Ferry was subject to pretty severe spring flooding. The first wooden bridge crossing the Kootenai wasn't built until 1905. But that bridge was too low, too close to the water, and also susceptible to flooding and washouts. A new, what they called the High Bridge, which was made of wood, replaced it in 1910, but people obviously still weren't satisfied at this point in 1914. It wasn't until 1933 that they got a steel and concrete bridge that could reliably stand up to floods and provide reliable access across the river.
They were trying to make the people living near Bonner's Ferry, either the people in the city or nearby, mm-hmm. affected by the river, they had petitioned the government. They had asked them to make improvements.
Yes. And actually, now that we're talking about this, I'm unclear if it was people trying to cross the river that were pushing this or mm-hmm. people trying to boat up and down the river. It could have been both.
Yeah, it could have been. Well, indeed. I guess it sounds like we're going to be talking a little bit about Bonner's. Wait, that 1933 bridge, is that the bridge that stands today? Do you know?
No, they did rebuild it one more time. And I read the date. I think it was in the 1950s that the bridge that we have today was built. Either 1950 or 1980.
Okay.
So sometime later.
It sure is an aha moment when you drive down and there's that giant flag and the historic town's nestled in there. And then if you keep going north up to Canada, you drive back up in that majestic view.
Yeah. It makes me wonder how many times they've kind of tweaked that that curve, going into town and then back up the hill on the other side.
Yeah. It is quite a crossing, though. I mean, that bridge crosses that's a engineering feat. I'm not surprised that the wooden bridge in 1905 kept getting washed out. That makes sense. You're listening to the Community Character Hour. I'm here with Heather Upton and Hannah Combs. Hannah Combs is the executive director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum, and Heather Upton is a director emeritus of the same institution. I'm Jack Peterson, and before we get into our show today, and it sounds like we may be going to be learning a little bit more about that crossing and the man E.L. Bonner for whom the town and the in this county is named. Before we get into that, it's actually Pledge Drive Week here at KRFY. This is our annual membership drive. It's our spring drive, our first spring drive in a very long time. We are coming to you now, and hopefully you are enjoying this show and regularly enjoy the show. We've been on for 3 years now. This is our third
year. This is our third year.
We're in our third year. And if you, like me, and have learned much during this program over these past 3 years, and you appreciate it, and you want to keep it coming to you, now would be a great time to call the radio station and become a member. The phone number is 208-265-2992, and we are officially kicking off the pledge drive, like, right now. We had one person call in last week, and we said, Brian, yes, you can be the first. You can be the first caller. So Brian from Sagal got the honor of being the first caller. But you, dear listener, you can be the first caller of the actual week now that it's underway. So give us a call at 208-265-2992 or donate online at krfy.org. The reason you should call is because operators are standing by. And actually, we didn't even test the phones before we went on the air this morning. So if somebody wants to, give Julie a call. She's over there in the office. She's waiting for you. She's got the paperwork ready to go. And it's a quick and painless process. And you can actually find out if the phones will ring when you call us. So that'd be you'd be doing us a favor by doing that. Calling 208-265-2992 right now.
And you never know who will pick up that phone. I remember watching the phone drives on TV in the 80s, and there were the Muppets.
Yes.
It's true.
If you give a significant donation, will they answer in a Muppet voice?
Yes. You can get an impression over the phone, I believe. An impression of your choice. It kind of depends on
amount
you're willing to give. I'm not sure what kind of accents Julie does, but you could find out. 208-265-2992. That's what we're doing, and we are asking you to do it now. If you've thought about it for a while, if you appreciate this program, and you appreciate the other programming that comes to you on this radio station, now is the time to call that number. Let's get back to history, though, shall we?
Yeah. Yes. So long, long before Bonner's Ferry, thanks to our collaboration on this episode with the Boundary County Museum, we have some amazing primary sources to tell the story of one man who started a business in the far northern reaches of Idaho, and he quickly moved on from that project, and his name still remains. So this was really fun, hauling the museum up north, and they have such an incredible group of volunteers, and they gave us the richest history and photos, and we're just so thankful for them to share their archives with us today.
You were actually on the phone with somebody from the Boundary County History Museum?
Yeah, Sue.
Or is it Bonner's Ferry? Okay.
Yeah, in Bonner's Ferry.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful museum.
I've been in there.
Isn't it amazing?
It's very cool, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I invited them to come, and
it's a long drive.
It's a long drive. And they were really excited about it, but instead they decided to share.
Yeah.
And so we're so thankful to them.
Does the Bonner County Museum envy Boundary County's downtown location for the museum?
It is a very nice location that they have there, right on the main street.
You're walking up and down
stumble
and pop
upon
into
it.
The museum.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The foot traffic, the kind of incidental foot traffic is definitely attractive. And they are in a historic building, which is really cool. They're actually in a few historic buildings that are all, merged together. So you kind of drive by and you're like, oh, it's a cute little museum. And then you go in and you're like, it just keeps going and going and going. It's this amazing maze of artifacts and vignettes and stories they've put together. So, yes, in some ways, there's a little bit of envy for their wonderful facility.
It's a huge anchor, too, to their downtown. I mean, obviously, their downtown is a lot smaller than Sandpoint.
But yeah, and Bonners is interesting because you have the town, like the downtown, and then you have all of the, I'd say, a lot more of the business is up on the hill. And then you also have a lot more of the residential across the river. So each area of Bonners Ferry has its own identity. But the museum definitely kind of anchors and gives that historical feeling to the downtown part.
I don't know that many people who live in Bonners Ferry. And I wonder if there's downtown and do they call it like uptown? You know, the place up high? That's what I would call it.
You're probably most familiar.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I'm halfway in between. And what's really fun is each one has between, when I say each one, Sandpoint, Bonners Ferry has such a distinct feeling.
True.
That it's according to how I feel that day, like where I want to get my groceries and so forth. But I feel like I'm not as well versed either. It's such a beautiful community and I need to spend more time, but I would never pretend to understand the local vernacular. But I think when you say under the sun, everyone knows where that is. You know, there's certain like distinct areas. Mm-hmm. And I love going, I've spent the most time at the courthouse, as in like the DMV, and not for other reasons. Thank you. They keep wanting me to do jury duty and so forth. And that's such like a cool Art Deco building.
It is, yeah.
And it's so well preserved. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes they feel that I'm really strange because I'm always wandering around, like wanting to know more and look at different areas.
The sheriff's station's right there. And they're like, what is this lady doing?
Yeah. I've spent quite a bit of time with the mapper trying to understand more about our historic property. Yeah. So when you talk to a lot of the locals there, they have, you know, of course, they go back, you know, to the very beginning and their families, and they do know everybody. And so that charm is just like so priceless.
Yeah. The volunteers at the museum, at the Historical Society, are so wonderful. If you pop in on a weekend, they are happy to just kind of swoop you up and tell you stories. So many good storytellers in Bonners Ferry.
Bonners Ferry, a wonderful town named after Bonner, E.L. Bonner. Who was E.L. Bonner, who lends his name to that town and to this county, which is not in, or about, it's always bothered
me a
little bit.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
You'll explain.
Yes, so Edward L. Bonner there's also a discrepancy here. Sometimes you see his name written as Edwin L. Bonner, which is funny that there's this glaring error in the historical record, because as we will learn, this guy's kind of a big deal. But if you see Edward, Edwin, Edward is correct, but he has been remembered by both names.
There's no twin.
No, the secret twin.
Secret twin.
No secret
twins. He has the mustache.
Yes. That's how you tell them apart. So Edward L. Bonner seemed to be full of drive and enthusiasm from a young age. He was born in New York in 1834, and he grew up raising cattle with his father. But at age 13, dreaming of one day owning a mercantile store, he took an apprenticeship at Lord & Taylor in New York City. Heather's so excited about
really
this.
Really excited about it.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Lord & Taylor is?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's, if you think of like high-end department stores, especially like in New York, Lord & Taylor is, you know, part
iconic.
Of... iconic. Yeah. And... for me, visually, I being an antique dealer, if I can spot that signature, like embroidered label with that like jazzy font, that's always like Lord & Taylor, and it's a heartbeat moment for me.
So did the era of the big department stores kind of kick off in the like 1880s, around that time?
Oh, gosh.
I'm just thinking, and this would be what, 1847?
Yeah.
This would be... is it a little earlier?
I think that That would be correct.
Would it have been more of a mercantile store at that time rather than a big department store?
Yep, I would say so.
This is pre-Civil War.
Pre-Civil War, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, just thinking about, like, the marketing and so forth and how it got here. So if you were someone living in this area, it was more like inspiration through like the catalogs and, you know, Sears and different things like that.
Like I'd love to have that. If only they could get it to North Idaho.
Yes, the town lady, you know.
Like the fashionable
lady, you know, that would show up on the train from the East Coast that knew what was really going on, you know, starting the trends.
Yeah, whereas we're 20 years behind out here probably on fashion.
Are you talking then and now? So
he got this apprenticeship at Lord & Taylor. And he showed such an aptitude for business leadership that he actually became a department head for the company when he was still a teenager, which is just remarkable that they trusted someone who was, you know, 16, 17 with an entire department of what would become such a legacy business in New York City.
Huh. It's amazing.
Yeah. So he's a New Yorker, but a farmer. I mean,
yeah. That's funny. Yeah. I actually thought about this. I was like, I'm guessing he didn't grow up
in the city.
In New York, in Manhattan, probably. But at that time, there would have been a lot of farmland relatively close to that area. Even on the northern part of the island, it was probably still pretty rural.
Yeah.
That's incredible. But he had the dream and the vision, and he had the catalogs under his bed.
Yeah, of course. He's like, no more cows, more catalogs.
This is what I want to do. So while Edward was stretching his entrepreneurial muscles, his father moved across the country to Walla Walla, Washington.
And Walla Walla was a significant, correct? Yeah, it was a significant town at that time. Walla Walla was a name that people would have recognized.
A name you might have heard on this program before.
That's true. Yeah.
Yes, Jack, remember we talked about Trail to Gold?
I do remember. I do remember, Heather, the Trail to Gold.
I'm kind of snarky this morning. I apologize.
We've got that fun pledge drive energy
pledge drive energy. So Walla Walla was the connecting point between Portland and the Columbia River to the west, and the Idaho and Montana wilderness to the east. So it'd be a good place to be in business.
So you could get, like, a boat could get to Walla Walla, right? From the, I mean, from.
Yeah, that was like the terminus of the navigation on the Columbia at that point.
Right. So that was basically the furthest inland you could go. Mm-hmm. That's Walla Walla. Yeah, big.
Gateway to the Wild West.
Cool.
Maybe.
And that's where Edwin L. Vodder moved. No, his father moved.
Yes.
And he went with?
Well, yes. So in 1856, he was 22. Edward followed his father west.
Okay.
Traveling by ship from New York through the Panama Canal to San Francisco, which is like, I just watched.
Or, I'm guessing around the horn, right?
No. Nope.
Wasn't the Panama Canal in the 1900s?
That's okay. Fact check me, please.
Okay, I believe he would have gone all the way around.
Well, yeah, because that was Roosevelt finished it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He walked across the Panama Canal.
He was the first.
That's right.
Ah, well.
It's a long trip.
Sometimes
either way.
And even historians.
Yeah. In 1856, it's a really long trip to get to go on a boat all the way around two continents to get to.
Yeah.
And the horn was dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, somehow he arrived in Dalles, Oregon in 1857. So then he continued to Walla Walla, but upon his arrival, he was too short on finances to start the mercantile store. And that was, you know, his lifelong dream. So he turned to farming for a number of years, you know, what he knew. So he harvested profitable bounties of barley and other crops.
Okay.
In Walla Walla.
Well, nice to have, nice to turn a profit as a farmer. And not everybody does.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So after farming for only 5 years, he had $11,000 to invest. This is a lot of money at the time.
It is.
And like any savvy businessman, when he heard of the gold discovered on Wild Horse Creek in British Columbia in 1863, he dreamed less about panning for gold and more about mining the miners.
Love that. Such an entrepreneur.
This is the, so this is kind of the, that old, you know, saying, if you want to make money in a gold rush, sell shovels.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. Not,
Don't try to get the gold yourself. And that was his theory as well.
Yeah.
That's what he went for.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, you see this in Seattle with the Klondike gold rush. A lot of the big businesses in the Northwest were founded by selling shovels to miners.
Yeah.
And then Levi jeans.
Yeah.
I always love that tale. Very tough.
Yes. Well, Levi jeans are tough. That wasn't out west though, was it?
I think that's how the brand got started.
California?
California?
California Gold Rush. Yeah. Oh, not an Oregon company.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think more like Filson, which
was a Seattle born company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. So he was farming for 5 years.
Jack's like, enough about fashion.
Well, I'm looking at the clock here. We're turning it into
the history of fashion. Thank goodness we have Jack to keep us focused.
As long as we're taking a diversion here, let me just throw out the phone number one more time. 208-265-2992. I will individually thank the folks who have called already, which is a couple. But if you are just tuning in, we are doing our membership drive right now. You can call and support this program and others that you hear on this fine local independent radio station by calling Julie, who's sitting over in the office right now, hopefully with a cup of coffee and waiting for the phone to ring. The phone number is 208-265-2992. Or, of course, the website works too, krfy.org/donate, if you want to get right to that page. Okay.
So.
Here we go.
Edward L. Bonner. Edward L. Bonner, not Edwin, thought there might be an opportunity to open a supply post at Wild Horse Creek. So in 1864, he traveled with his cousin Richard and a friend named John from Walla Walla to the territory of Idaho through Spokane and then the river crossing at the Senawakateen. So just John, right? No last name.
There was a last name. I took it out just because we're trying to keep the show shorter today.
Shortened it by a couple syllables. Good job. Okay.
They then travel. I mean, what if I were related? They then traveled up the Sully Valley along a trail cut out by the Boundary Commission in 1859, now called the Wild Horse Trail. So that is a very important and significant marker, actually. And I know the Daughters of the American Revolution just put out a really cool marker up there. So if you can pull off on your way to Bonner's Ferry, you can see it.
That's great.
So in the fall of 1864, Edward's party arrived at the settlement of Shalepa on the Kootenai River. Edward, Richard, and John remained in the Kootenai camp for a few days observing their surroundings. The Kootenais were able to skillfully transport many people across the river in the sturgeon-nosed canoes, which made Edward think that this is the best place to conduct business on the river. He purchased the rights to cross the river from Chief Abraham for $50. So that was equivalent to more than $1,600 today. Wow, that's amazing to think. The men quickly built a good and sufficient flatboat for a ferry in a supply post on the north bank of the river.
Okay. It sounds like the service... A service that the prospectors had little choice but to accept.
Unless they wanted to swim across.
Yeah.
But this wasn't exactly the Wild West, where anything goes. So the three men had to apply to the Territory of Idaho for ferry rights. At the second session of the Legislative Assembly on December 22nd, 1864, there's our date, Kootenai County was officially created, encompassing all of present-day Kootenai, Bonner, and Boundary counties. The Act for Exclusive Ferry Rights was given to the men for a period of 5 years, making theirs the first official business in Kootenai County.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is. Yeah. It's also, I mean, it's amazing, especially, I mean, living today as we do and thinking about where people live, where economic activity is, you know, it's kind of amazing and different to think of. Mm-hmm. That's where it started. Was, I mean, yeah. That's where the economic, I guess, center of Bonner County at the of the whole northern counties, including
County is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so throughout Post Falls, throughout Coeur d'Alene, throughout Sandpoint, throughout Hope, the economic center of Kootenai County at the time is this crossing of the Kootenai River in up in what is now Bonner's Ferry.
The only place that's bigger at the time is Seni Aquitaine.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's because it serves the same purpose. So that one has the ferry crossing the Ponderay River.
Yeah.
This one crosses the Kootenai, and those were two essential crossings to get up to the Gold Rush in Canada.
Up north. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That really kind of, I think, loops us all around, because we started with like economic vitality, tourism, attraction. Mm-hmm. It's the crossings.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be able to get where the gold is.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. So he is up there. It's fun to also to think of this going from Walla Walla, just like, I guess I'll go see what Idaho's like in this day and age.
It's like, did they even have a map at this point?
Yeah.
I mean, they had done the boundary survey, so there was some record of where they were going, but.
Yeah.
Incredible. So during those Gold Rush years, it was quite an investment for him. Although it's his name that's remembered, Bonner was just the money man for the venture, moving on within moments and leaving his friend John. Oh, here we go. Thank you.
Here we
Walton.
Go.
John Walton to run the ferry and trading post.
Good night, John boy.
Well, and he was the one that was left behind, doing the enterprise. Mm-hmm. So very important, John Walton.
He does have a last name.
He does have a last name. Meanwhile, Edward returned to his mercantile in Walla Walla and married Carrie Kenyon. Traveling back through the Kootenai Valley in 1865 with his new wife and his cousin Richard, Edward brought more supplies to the Kootenai River Post and continued on into Montana. He had a brief stint as agent for the Oregon Steam Navigation Co. at Lewiston, Idaho until 1866. Further understanding and connecting with the systems and the people that made business flow through the region.
I would love, I did not have time to research, but I'd love to learn more about his wife, Carrie, because I love the stories of the women who came out here when it was so undeveloped. And I'm always wondering, you know, I'm surprised sometimes by the number of women who are like, I am 100% in, I will ranch the cows, I will do the farm work, like, who were committed to making it in the wilderness. But I'm sure there were also wives who were like, you brought me from New York City for this. What are we doing here?
And was Carrie fashionable?
Oh.
I would imagine so, right?
We'll have to find out.
I think that might be the next episode. In 1866, at age 32, he had moved to Missoula with his new wife, Carrie, and set down firm roots. Naturally successful in business, Bonner, he accumulated so much wealth through his Missoula Mercantile Company. A sort of who's who biography of Bonner at the time describes him as the largest and most influential house of wholesale and retail goods in the Northwest. Wow, that's quite a statement.
Yeah. Yeah. He finally got his mercantile store in Missoula. Has that anchored there.
Wow.
And now it's the biggest business in the whole Northwest.
He's a dream maker.
He goes from Walla Walla, pops through Bonner's Ferry to set up a ferry, back to Walla Walla, out to Missoula, and he
briefly lives in Lewiston.
Okay.
Between there.
And by 1866, he's 32 years old and the largest and most influential house of wholesale and retail grocers in the Northwest.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, but the thought that he was
32 in those days.
Yeah. mistake, that's 52 like 52
is the new 30, oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But to think of the opportunity to get the claim of the crossing, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. to have the foresight is just absolutely incredible.
Strategic and thinker.
Right. All the farthest away that you could, which would, you know, New York mm-hmm. in terms mm-hmm. of states. Yeah. It's incredible. He would sit at my dinner of the historic famous yeah. people that I want to yeah. hang out with locally. Yeah.
The ghosts.
Yeah. The ghost. In 1873, he hired a man named A.B. Hammond to work at the store. They hit it off and 3 years later became business partners. When the Northern Pacific Railroad came through the region, they supplied railroad ties for the effort. That led to the establishment of one of the largest, America's largest lumber mills along the Blackfoot River. In his free time, wow, Bonner was a co-owner of the First National Bank of Missoula and president of the Montana Real Estate Association. I always find this really funny because it tends to be the people that had the original plats that are the biggest realtors and have stake in the banks and, you know, are the lenders.
They're the only ones yeah. with money, probably,
yeah.
at the time.
So true to form in all of his business affairs, Mr. Bonner remains a large owner, but gives his attention now mainly to other enterprises. So he can't stop.
Serial entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Yeah. He keeps investing.
And finding the right yeah. person to like plop in that seat so he can continue to, mm-hmm. you know, go on his ventures.
Yeah. Venture capitalist.
Yeah.
He's the money man. Mm-hmm. By this point, serial entrepreneur seems like the right, that's what we would call him today. So, mm-hmm. yeah. And what else do we know about him besides the fact that he got very wealthy pursuing these kind of mercantile operations and
he's a dream maker.
He had, yeah. Dream well, maker. He, yeah.
And
he,
fashionable.
He had an eye
undoubtedly.
For, yeah. I mean, he kind of had an eye for where he could make a buck, clearly. Mm-hmm. Very effectively turns his $11,000 into, a massive business empire.
Yeah. And so I'm sure you're feeling the same, Hannah. I want to now go into the archives of the Boundary County Museum and see, like, where Carrie and Edward were part of the civic club or like what else were they like socially?
Probably in Missoula.
Yeah.
But up here there wouldn't have been a town in Bonner's Ferry.
So that's okay. Yeah. That's right.
Similar to Sunny Aquatine, I'm thinking there probably would have been like one store, the ferryman's house, and like maybe a couple of other little places where people lived, but not a civic club at that.
Sometimes we need to be reminded of that. Right?
Although if anyone
I'm
were to start
like
it.
1922, here we go. So in the archives at the Boundary County Museum, we found a copy of Bonner's passport. Mm. So it doesn't show where he was traveling internationally, but since this was a time when photographs were still in common, and they certainly weren't in color, it gives a detailed description of his person. So Bonner is described as 5'11". Oh, I love this. With chestnut and gray hair. That's brilliant. Gray eyes, a fair complexion, and a high forehead.
All right.
I love that one of the lines on the passport is forehead. Uh-huh. Tell us more.
High, medium, low. Yeah. I don't know the history of passports. I don't know what at what point did people was it
Hannah's
usual?
Just lit up.
Yes.
We should do a whole show about passports. I've only seen a few in our archives, but it is so interesting as time goes by and the technology develops because Bonner's doesn't have a photograph on it, but it has this kind of detailed description of what he looked like.
Yeah.
And then as you start to see photographs, they're in black and white. So you still have the descriptions of hair color, eye color, complexion, because you couldn't tell in the photograph. So,
but no forehead today. They decided to leave that out. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure when I got my passport renewed, it did not ask me about my forehead shape.
Or height.
Is he would have had a passport. I mean, it would have served the same purpose in those days, international travel. Did you need one to go back and forth to Canada? I can't imagine most of the miners had passports.
When I was a kid, you didn't even need one.
So from like more like if I'm on Titanic.
Right. He would have gotten this
passage on a ship
when he was going to do the grand tour.
Yeah. Although I was kind of surprised that they even had passports at this point in time. Yeah. When you start seeing immigrants coming into Ellis Island and whatnot, they are very thorough about documenting everyone coming into the country. But I had never really thought about, oh, I want to go see my cousins in England and needing to have your passport back then. Yeah. I would have thought it was more casual.
Yeah.
But guess
so
not.
Cool. Another
Likewise.
Episode.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but he had one, which means that he's planning to do some international travel. But it's also interesting that he got the passport, but there's nothing in it as far as where he went. They weren't stamping these things, like saying he's been to Spain, he's been to Italy.
So the document that we saw, it basically looked like an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper you would have folded up, put in your briefcase or whatever you were carrying.
Yeah.
So maybe on the back, the only one, we just saw the kind of one side of the document.
There was another, could be more to it.
It does have a detail. It does tell, who's within his family party. So it has his wife's name, his children's names, where they were born, which I guess would show that they, were Americans. Because the kids at that time probably have no other documentation, but...
Okay.
It kind of says you're allowed, here's your passport and everyone in your family is kind of grouped with you.
Mm-hmm. I do think we should do an episode on documentation.
Yeah.
I think that's really fascinating and like what you needed to be able to say, because it's such a Wild West. Like if you flipped up your paper, what did that mean?
And it's so vulnerable to fire. We just did a presentation at the museum with our volunteer, Ken Conger, who showed us all these old pieces of office equipment. And it blew my mind thinking there was a time where you could not make a copy of something other than writing it out longhand.
Yes.
So... you had to take really good care of all of those papers.
Hmm. Well, he's described as 5'11", with chestnut and gray hair, gray eyes, a fair complexion, and a high forehead. That's what we know about him from his passport.
Yes.
And what else do we know about him?
He was also a passionate advocate for railroad development throughout Montana, which... would serve his business interests in nearly every way. He was regularly pressured to run for governor of Montana or the Montana Territory, but he never did. We don't know a lot about his private life, but we know he spent a lot of money to keep his family comfortable. In 1891, he built a mansion for his wife and children, which occupied an entire block in Missoula.
Yeah.
Wow. And would be worth at least $3 million today.
Yeah. I would think more than that.
Yeah.
Just the real estate in Missoula would be...
I think that figure might have come from an article from around 2001.
Okay.
So probably triple it.
Or maybe the house itself and not the land it sits on.
Yeah.
Okay.
He also loved his New York roots, and he spent nearly every winter there enjoying the company of relatives and friends. So maybe that's what he was using his passport for, was to just get back and forth to New York.
Winters in New York. Yeah, a little milder, I suppose. A little more comfortable to be in New York and take in a Broadway show than
here with 12 feet of snow. So sadly, while driving his new car in 1902, which would have been if not the very first, probably the very first car in Missoula or maybe even Montana.
I bet.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder how, I guess it would have arrived on a train, probably. So sadly, he was driving his new car. He was all excited to take it out, and he had a heart attack and died in the car at the age of 67. Which is, pretty good age at that time.
It's probably how he would want to go, right?
Just living his best life.
Yeah, with being the first.
Of course, yes. The innovator. He was remembered as a loyal friend. He was called gentle in his manner and habits of speech. The local newspaper called him one of the best known men in the state, and more than 500 people wow. attended his funeral services held at the mansion.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And it seems like Bonner's presence here in this state, where he's got some serious namesakes, he was barely here.
Right.
It was just
a blip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He passed through. He got his start in Walla Walla, and then he made his real name in Missoula. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, there is one town in Montana called Bonner, I don't believe they have a Bonner County. So we're kind of lucky in that way.
I'm just going to ask this for our listeners. Mm-hmm. Does the mansion still exist?
I don't think so, but
darn it.
I've only seen black and white photos of it, which makes me think it mm-hmm. probably burned down. I should have looked into this. This would be a great thing to follow up
on.
Yeah, it is a beautiful house, though.
Sounds incredible.
Mm-hmm. At least he came here. He didn't just send his money. He actually did come here in person mm-hmm. and cross the river.
Yep.
And bought the rights from Chief Abraham to establish a ferry crossing. Yes. And did he ever actually operate the ferry during those 3 months before he handed it over to his friend John Walton?
So that remains a mystery, at least for now. But it seems unlikely that he did. Although, being the innovator that he was, it wouldn't surprise me if he was like, I will take the first ferry across mm-hmm. and then I will hand it off to you.
Yeah, I think he likes the first. Yeah. That's the sexy part to him.
Yes. An article about one of his other business ventures states that he was keen to, quote, entrust the execution of the plans and details to others, which was probably the case with the ferry as well.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is all very interesting. And by the way, it is still membership drive time. We got some thank yous to make, and I will make those in just a moment. The phone number is 208-265-2992, and Julie is standing by. I've been trying not to break up this show too much by throwing out that phone number, but Julie is waiting for her next call. There's a few of them. We've got a few of them, and I will be thanking you in just a moment. However, let's get back to the current show, and then before we tie things up, 208-265-2992, membership drive here, 88.5 KRFY, and you're listening to the Community Character Hour, talking about Edwin L. Bonner.
Edward
L. Bonner. Why? You put Edwin in my head. I didn't do this.
I don't think I'll ever forget that whisper.
Anyway, it's all very interesting, but
that's his mythical twin brother with a mustache, Edwin.
Yes.
No, Edwin.
All of his life took place outside of Bonner County, except for he briefly passed through Bonner mm-hmm. County, it seems like.
Yes, he crossed the river at Sunny Aquitaine.
Yeah, and made no real impact here in Bonner County.
Correct.
I mean, okay, sure. Yeah.
Maybe not physical.
Not specifically.
Okay, so what did he, I mean, right, good point. But he wasn't here in Bonner County doing anything. He wasn't the mayor. He never lived here.
But he put it on the map. I think we can say that, right?
Okay. Well, Bonner's Ferry, he did.
Mm.
What about Bonner County?
Are you suggesting that there's no relevance to the story we're telling, Jack?
No. Okay.
So this is the thing that you have to wrap your mind around. Bonner's Ferry was once a part of Bonner County. And before that, all of present-day Bonner and Boundary Counties were both part of Kootenai County.
Aha.
So Bonner County was officially formed in 1907 and was formed from the north half of Kootenai County. So it stretched 70 miles from near the south end of Lake Pend Oreille to the border with Canada and took up the entirety of the Idaho Panhandle. So, the legend goes that when Bonner County was formed, a heated debate took place. That's not the first time we've said that.
This is a through line. Right?
Over where the county seat should be. So, Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry were the most populous towns and the best contenders, but they squabbled over who should have the honor of becoming the county seat. So apparently a truce was contrived whereupon Sandpoint could become the county seat if the name of the newly formed county honored Bonner's Ferry's namesake. Huh.
Okay.
Interesting.
I'll take that with a grain of salt, but okay. I can, yeah.
We have a skeptic in our midst.
Once again, yeah.
Huh. Thank goodness we had those newspapers.
Yeah.
In 1915, Boundary County was split off from Bonner County to create the layout we still know today. So Bonner's Ferry became the county seat. Bonner County kept two of Idaho's most beautiful lakes, Priest and Ponderay, for itself, and Sandpoint remains its county seat.
So I do wonder if there was a twinge of regret when, you know, our northernmost county decided to declare independence.
Mm-hmm.
They had insisted so fiercely that the combined county would be called Bonner.
Yeah.
And then when they split off, that name was already taken and they couldn't take it back.
Right.
Yeah.
So they had to become Boundary County.
Well,
it would have been great to be part of those council meetings.
Oh, yeah. I bet they were just as fun as they ever have been.
That's the story, then, of the man behind the name of our county and Bonner's Ferry and a town in Montana, not far from Missoula, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he has some streets and things named after him elsewhere as well.
And I love, like, the clarity of the confusion, too, because it took me forever to understand the difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that it took, I mean, you know, Kootenai County is established much earlier than 1905. Mm-hmm. We get Bonner. 1915, we get Boundary. Mm-hmm. So why is E.L. Bonner significant? Really, for Bonner County as it is today, it's really just that we carry this person's name.
Yeah.
As our county name. But it is amusing that he really kind of skirted all around Bonner County doing business and never actually spent much time here.
Yeah.
So that's the irony of it.
Yeah, his footprint was in Missoula.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
And I love how it connects us all.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Well, I really want to thank Boundary County Museum for the collaboration on this project. It was so much fun working with their incredible team over there. Again, like, if you haven't had an opportunity, it's worth a drive up north.
And I heard they have an exciting new project.
Yes. Yes. It was amazing. It was one of those kismet moments because when we had called to see if we could have that collaboration, Sue, one of their volunteers, had mentioned that they have an incredible new interpretive sign that they'll be installing soon. Right now, the sign's at the printers, so installation date to be determined. But it will join the many incredible interpretive signs that they have.
That's one of the things that's really special about that museum is even when they are closed, if you go on the backside of their building, they have this amazing wall of interpretive signs that kind of touch on all the key moments in Boundary County history. Yes.
So once we find that out, we'll give a shout out to them again once they have it installed. So you can make a special trip to go see it.
Well worth the trip.
Mm-hmm. The Community Character Hour is the program you're listening to right now. I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here with Hannah Upton.
It happens all
Hannah
the time.
Hannah Combs and Heather Upton. I'm usually pretty good about that.
So we have a pen names.
Yes. So Hannah Upton, I think, was mine. Because people have mixed up and misspelled our names quite often.
And Heather Combs.
Yes.
Well. H. Upton and H. Combs are both here from the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. This is membership drive time here at 88.5 KRFY. We do one of these a year, a real on-air membership drive. There, we have other ways of raising funds, but this is the time that we really call out to you, the listeners, to support this radio station. And what would you be supporting if you... if you call us up and talk to Julie and pledge your support right now by calling 265-2992 in the 208 area code, is shows like this, which is one of my favorites to do on this radio.
Oh,
and to listen to even, And I wish I could take more credit for it, but really the work that you guys do for this program is incredible. The two of you do much more of it than I do. I mostly sit here and just ask silly questions.
The important question.
That's your role. Yeah.
You keep us on track.
Yeah.
Okay.
Out of fashion.
But I mean, this show was because we knew it was membership drive time. We've been giggling a little bit more than we usually do. But you guys put a lot of work into these shows. There's a lot of research that goes into it. It's not, you don't just, you know, take a book off the shelf and read from it. I mean, you.
Correct.
You do true research for this program.
We try to find the little threads that haven't been told before.
Yeah.
And it's thanks to the listeners who support the station, who make that possible to keep it on air. So thank you.
Yes. We appreciate it. The opportunity to be able to work with Hannah and Jack and talk about history, it definitely feeds my soul. And so I appreciate all the support to bring us all together again. Mm-hmm.
It's a good team.
And it's the kind of thing that you really only hear on KRFY or on community radio stations, period. And it's because the reason we can do it is in particular because of those individual donations. We receive some support from our underwriters as well, which we're very grateful for. But the majority of the funding for this radio station comes from individual listeners, and it's because we have individual listeners who donate that we can maintain our independence. And when we're doing a show like the Community Character Hour, we're not guided by, you know, say if we were funded by something else, we were funded by the state of Idaho's Department of what?
Department which are fabulous. Yeah. They do some really great support of all the communities.
But we're able to venture, for example, across state lines. We can tell stories about people who are impactful in our area, but might be from Washington or might be from Montana, for one thing, that the state of Idaho might not be so interested in funding. They might be a little more strict in what they consider of historical relevance to broadcast. But if you find this kind of thing valuable, you can support us at 208-265-2992 or go to krfy.org. I would like to thank Mona in particular, who loves the folk show and Garden Life, who was the first call of the week. Thank you, Mona, for supporting this radio station. And thanks to an anonymous donor who called in with a $35 donation for us. Yay. Appreciation for the Community Character Hour.
Oh.
And those listeners are the kind of individuals that I'm talking about who keep this radio station independent and on the air. And you can be one of them as well by calling Julie at 208-265-2992. It won't always be Julie, but she's the person who happens to be in the office right now taking calls.
It may be Kermit.
Yeah. Well, she does such a nice job. That's right. And she may do, if you for the right dollar amount, she may even do an impression. She can put on a different kind of voice for you if you don't want to talk to Julie. She could be Sean Connery, I think. Give it a try.
Anybody might pick up that phone.
Yeah. Let's talk a little more about this program and what people can expect from us here on the Community Character Hour. What's coming up next month on the Community Character Hour?
Well, we need to find more out about Clara.
Carrie.
Carrie
Kenyon.
Carrie Kenyon.
So Clara is Carrie's mysterious. She's married to Edwin.
Yes. Okay, perfect.
Yes.
Was she a fashionable lady? That could be the intro.
We will do our best to find out. I'll see if there's an introductory newspaper article.
Yeah, there must be photos of the family.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
They
had the house. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But our next episode is going to be a topic that Heather is familiar with because you curated a whole exhibit about this family.
Oh my gosh.
And what they did.
Incredible.
Here.
Yeah. So By Way of Water was an exhibit. I'm trying to remember the year that we opened it. It's a permanent exhibit in the Bonner County Museum. And It was really, it became kind of a genealogical exhibit because most of the storytelling in the archives revolved around the Markham family and Northern Navigation Company. And if my memory serves me right, the Elliots that were running that as well. And so we get to talk about the Markham family.
So we did kind of an overview of steamboats and ferries. Today we got to talk about one specific ferry. Next month we'll talk about one family really involved in the steamboats and ferries. They kind of did it all.
And subtle,
More aqueous transportation.
Settlement, though, too, is a huge one.
The pioneers are starting to arrive.
Some of the most fabulous oral histories from Markham's mother. So can't wait to share that.
So this is the family that ran the ferry at Sunny Aquitaine.
Yes.
Which, as I am always at pains to point out, no longer really exists.
I want to, like, just live there because of the history. I bet.
You could just go drive down there and
I could
just sit there and tell people the stories in the summer.
I do. I want to do a field trip over there, though. And it's, I mean, the energy must be really powerful.
Well, I would, I would think that'd be the case. I think you would be haunted. I think so. You're too, you're a little too in touch with the, with the other world, I think, Heather. I think
you, Elmina Markham would speak through you.
Oh my gosh, what a gift that would be. All of a sudden my eyes go back.
Oh no.
Let's talk a little, I guess, about, so that'll be next month here on this program. The Markham family and the Northern Navigation Company is our next subject. Early, before the bridges, how people got around in North Idaho and that impact. At the museum, what's coming up?
Yeah, we have a few events coming up in April. First, we are thrilled to be hosting a film at the library on April 2nd at 4:30. The film will start at 5, so we'll have a little bit of a social hour before that. So this film is about the woman who wrote the song America the Beautiful and what that song meant to her and the world she lived in and what it still means today. We are also really lucky that we will have the director of the film, John DeGraff, visiting as well for a Q&A. So if you're curious about the history behind one of our most iconic patriotic songs, do stop by. Again, that's on April 2nd at the library. The film starts at 5 o'clock. And then on April 4th, we have our Free First Saturday at the museum and hands-on history activities. So admission is free for everyone. We will have kids activities, and that's from 10 to 2 on April 4th. And we're grateful to our sponsor, Janice DeBon, for making sure admission is free for everybody on that day. And then, whether or not you are a member of the Historical Society, though we hope you are, we are having our annual membership meeting on Tuesday, April 28th. This year, it's going to be at the Hive, and we're going to have a special guest speaker who will be announced soon. But that will be kicking off at 5 o'clock on Tuesday, April 28th. And you don't have to be a member to attend. You can just show up and hear all of the things we've done in the past year and everything that we're planning for the year to come. So please join us.
Wonderful. It's 9 o'clock, and that means it's time for us to sign off. This has been the Community Character Hour. You've been listening to the first hour of the 2026 KRFY Spring Membership Drive. And you can become a member today, right now, by calling 208-265-2992 or make a donation on our website, krfy.org, and we will be thanking those individuals as well as soon as we pull up the information from the website. A special thanks again to Mona and to our anonymous donor for being the first two callers of this pledge drive and hopefully the first of many. Thanks so much. And thanks to you two, Heather and Hannah, for all you do for this radio station.
Favorite part of the job.
Most certainly. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, well, we'll still stick with the regular schedule. It's time for Bird Note on 88.5 KROQI Monterey.